Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. Edward Albert Meier is a man who lives in Switzerland. He's in his late 70s. He lives about 52 minutes east of Zurich in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti. He grew up in Switzerland, particularly in Bulak, Switzerland, traveled to the Middle East later in life, did many different kinds of work, but his purpose here on this earth is the same purpose he's had in six other lifetimes. Edward Albert Meier, his spirit form has incarnated on the earth six other times as a prophet. He's in other lifetimes been called Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each of these previous lifetimes, he taught an ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. This teaching was brought to the earth by extraterrestrial humans in our ancient past, and they were mistaken as gods and angels. And what was written down in our holy books is our best guess at trying to make sense of what we saw. And there has, as a result of that, there's much confusion that has permeated into our culture for many, many years. And part of the teaching in the Meier information is to clarify our thinking so that we understand how the universe works and what the purpose of our life is, and how to start correcting some of the major problems that exist on our planet. There are certain creational natural laws in place that nature works by. And they generally don't tell us these laws, these extraterrestrials that Billy calls the Pleiaren, and they don't tell us these laws right out. A few times they will, but it's better that we find them for ourselves. And one of the primary law of this universal consciousness is something that we call love, but is very distorted on our world. We think of love in terms of affection, in terms of romance, but love is much more constant than that. It's based on wisdom, it's based on respect. It's also the natural byproduct of careful observation, particularly of nature, because the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. Creation is a term that the Meier information applies to the universal consciousness. Now, unfortunately, in our religions in the ancient past, we use the term God, which was blurred with a very anthropomorphic kind of perspective. So over time, this universal consciousness, the superintelligence, which created everything, started to take on human-like qualities. And this is what was recorded in our religious writings. And now, God has become jealous and angry and vengeful, and he, in the Old Testament, he takes sides in wars, particularly in some of the Old Testament passages. I think one is Numbers 31:7, where Moses commands the army of Israel to wipe out the Midianites. They wipe out the army first, and then when they come back victorious, Moses is extremely angry because they didn't kill the women and children. And they had to go back in and kill the women and children. And they kept the virgins for themselves, according to Moses' commands as well. Now, the Meyer information claims that Moses was not receiving commands from the creator of the universe. He was receiving commands from an individual that today we call Jehovah. During that time, he was most likely called Yehovah because the letter J is the youngest letter, not only in the English alphabet, but in pretty much any alphabet here on the earth, whether it's German or French or Aramaic or Hebrew or Greek. The letter J really came into being around 1550 when a man named Gian Giorgio Tarissino extrapolated the letter J from the letter I. And believe it or not, they went back into these ancient writings, not so much in the original languages, but in all the new translations that came out, new meaning the original 1611 version of the King James Bible, the Gutenberg Bible. These Bibles didn't have the letter J in it. You didn't see Jehovah. You saw Yehovah or something similar. You saw not Joshua. You would see Yeshua. And there was no Apostle John. He was probably most likely called the Apostle Johannine or something to that effect. And the person that we call Jesus now in the Latin was referred to as Iesus. And in the Greek was referred to something very similar, sounds very, very similar. But what they did, for one reason or another, they went back in all these ancient books and substituted the letter I for the letter J. Anyway, that's a bit of a tangent, but it just kind of illustrates the point that these writings have been changed very much over time. But the people on the earth in ancient times were seeing things that were real. They were seeing incredible things that would be incredible even today by our standards. Because the Plarin were on the earth at that time, and there was another group that was here, a kind of a splinter group that they call the Giza Intelligences. Have you ever wondered why the Great Pyramid is constructed the way it is? Why it's so incredibly massive and so perfect in its design? Well, there were a group of extraterrestrials from Orion here that came here about 35,000 years ago and then again about 70,000 years back. And they designed many of these ancient monolithic structures. Even though the native Earth humans certainly did a lot of the work, we didn't have the know-how, we didn't have the tools, but a lot of the stones and whatnot were moved with just hundreds of thousands of people and hundreds of thousands of animals. But there was also high-end technology involved and also a kind of telekinetic ability that these people from Orion had when they built these constructions in the past. Unfortunately, there were a group of these extraterrestrial humans who went far underground, far below the Giza Plateau, and they called themselves the Giza Intelligences. And for one reason or another, they wanted the Earth for their own. And probably because of the incredible beauty of the Earth, probably was much more beautiful back then even than it is now, even though it's still very beautiful, even though we're destroying it, and we'll talk about that tonight. But these extraterrestrial humans, not gray aliens, not reptilians, but extraterrestrial humans, they hid far below the Giza Plateau in these old cubicle constructions that were very, very ancient, some 70,000 years old. They were built about the time that the original pyramid was built. And there were a whole line of these vicious and brutal rulers that are part of the Giza Intelligences, and they can be traced all the way back to the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And there was a king of wisdom in Ishwish who was not a king of wisdom in terms of the spiritual teaching, but he was a bit of a scientist, and they called him Aris the Barbarian. He had great scientific wisdom, but not so much in terms of the spiritual side. And he was the one that played a large role in stirring up the Great War that caused Atlantis and Lemuria to destroy each other and almost destroy the planet when they brought back an incredible asteroid and slammed it into the planet, destroyed Atlantis. And by then, Mu had already been melted to the ground by these advanced weapons that the Atlanteans had on their ships, some kind of heat generating beams. So the Earth was devastated, and the people of the Earth that either died here or remained slowly degenerated, and society degenerated, and it was pretty much survival mode for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. But the Earth recovered, and society slowly started to appear again, and these extraterrestrials came back about, let me see, the great destruction of Atlantis occurred about 11,500 years ago, and they came back several thousand years after that. And once again, the people who were remaining on the Earth didn't know who they were. They didn't know where they came from. They were back to a primitive society. So when the extraterrestrials came again, they were very vulnerable. And many of our stories about gods and angels are really just our ancestors trying to understand high technology, which was astounding to them. So that's a very, very quick, brief overview of history here on the Earth, and I didn't even really plan to do that. But Edward Albert Meyer, his spirit form is extremely ancient. In the Meyer writings, they call his spirit form by the name Nokodemian. And as I said earlier, he's incarnated on the Earth as Enoch, who was really named Henoch. And there were three or four Henochs who incarnated. And the one Henoch about 8,000 years ago was the Henoch that wrote the Henoch prophecies. There was a Henoch after him about 4,000 years ago. But the Henoch prophecies talk about a time that we're living in now, a time as it describes in one prophecy that says that chemical weapons, nuclear weapons, biological weapons will be released by automated systems which run outside of human control. And this is one of the great disasters that's talked about in the Henoch prophecies. Again, the same spirit form resides in this farmer in Switzerland who lives again in Hinterschmidt-Rüti, who has had an extremely interesting life and whose writings are astounding. If you've ever read any of his books, the book The Psyche or The Might of the Thoughts or The Goblet of Truth, you'll understand that his learning is incredible. So one of his incarnations was as a man named Henoch, who made prophecies in the ancient past and prophecies which are coming true. And more of these prophecies that could occur in our lifetime would be the civil wars. I say two civil wars that could occur in the United States. And our country may be split up into five different areas. So how can we individually prevent these prophecies from occurring? How can we take control of our life and prevent all of these disasters from occurring? I mean, we've had disasters on the Earth going back to Atlantis and Lemuria, and even before Atlantis and Lemuria, there was a civilization on the Earth. which was led by a king of wisdom called Pelagon, who was very benevolent and very spiritual and very had incredible powers associated with his material consciousness. He was at times said to cause plants to grow with his mind, and I've read in certain places where he was said to be floating above the ground. All these, just with the power of his material consciousness. So Billy has written a book, it's called The Might of the Thoughts, to try to teach the Earth human again the true power of our material consciousness and our spiritual consciousness. You see, we have both a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. Your spiritual consciousness never dies. Your spiritual consciousness came in your body when you were about 21 days old. When your body was 21 days old, your spirit form came into your, what they call the superior colliculus, which is located at the midbrain. And when your material, your spiritual consciousness came in, your material consciousness also came in to the brain, your conscious mind, your subconscious mind. Your unconscious mind came in. And in the womb, the fetus or the embryo, whatever you want to call it at that age, starts to think, believe it or not. And deep in the subconscious of the fetus slash embryo is the wisdom of the predecessor personalities. Because your spiritual consciousness has lived many, many lifetimes and will live many, many more lifetimes. And the purpose of all of these lifetimes is to evolve, to grow in wisdom, to evolve your consciousness. To evolve your consciousness, you have to have independent thinking. You have to be an independent thinker. But our society, our whole society, creates pressure so you conform to society's thought patterns in the newspapers. Peer pressure when you're a kid at school. Anyone that thinks outside of the box can be ridiculed or attacked. This is not, in my opinion, by chance. This goes back to ancient times, I think, when these religions were formed, when these Giza intelligences tried to take control of the earth. They first knew that they had to take control of the consciousness of the people of the earth. And today we have rulers and leaders who are still trying to take our consciousness from us. In other words, they are creating a consciousness-conditioned tyranny. In the Goblet of Truth, Billy talks about our society being under a kind of tyranny of the consciousness. So we don't think independently, so we don't think for ourselves. Now, because of what has happened in our ancient past and because of just how we have evolved, the Earth humans have become particularly expert at clothing matters into words and terms. And it's interesting, Billy uses the word clothing matters. In other words, to cover up the real truth. So we use words and terms which are inappropriate and completely false sometimes. And as a rule, this happens because we have a complete non-understanding or un-understanding, a misinterpretation of what we've seen, particularly in the ancient past. That's why we get these inappropriate words like angel, which really means nothing more than messenger. However, today it has a fantastic connotation. And there's an interview that Billy did in 1988 that talks about some of these things. Very controversial what he has to say here. I'll let you make your own decision how much of this you can agree with. Anyway, in 1988, Billy says, not at all. In each and every case, the individual person is always the only one responsible for his or her thoughts. feelings, emotions, actions, and so forth. It is only the different religions and sects which claim that God or saints or guardian angels or Jesus Christ are guiding and bearing the responsibility for the human being's fate. But such claims are nothing more than religious sectarian delusions that are busily prodded by the head honchos of the religions and sects, so they can place people under their spell, bind their followers to them, and financially deplete and exploit them in every possible way. You see, another attack on our consciousness, trying to convince us that we're not personally responsible for our lives. We are responsible. We can control the circumstances of our lives. Good thinking leads to good feelings, which leads to good habits, which leads to good circumstances in your life. Correct thinking and knowledge is such a monstrous power that it continually brings into being what we want and desire. If our thoughts are correct, that's the key. You know, you can bring things into being that you don't want to occur because, unfortunately, we think unconsciously at times. Particularly if you have habits. You know, I have a laptop computer and an old computer that I'm still using. And every time I want to switch to the laptop, a lot of times, I'm telling you, a lot more times than I want to admit, I'll inadvertently go turn on the old computer. Or if I've shut down the old computer, I'll turn it on again. And that comes from unconscious thoughts. It comes from habits. And we need to learn to step outside our old habits and think independently and steer our thoughts and take control of our lives. Because if you just go on automatic, believe me, you're much more likely to go off the cliff than if you're alert and your material consciousness is aware. I kind of got off on several different tangents there, and I want to go down the rabbit hole a little deeper if you can bear with me just a second. Because one of the things that Billy talks about is the ancient writings here on the earth, the ancient, particularly the Sanskrit writings. And he says they're old fantasy-drenched writings about spirit and consciousness, and that many of the teachings in these old writings were confused and unreal. Now, one of the terms that the people that wrote the Sanskrit were called occultists. Now, an occult means the knowledge of the hidden knowledge. And Sanskrit was the primary sacred language of the Hindus. And the word Sanskrit means refined speech. One example of Sanskrit are the Upanishads, which are among the oldest writings in India. And the Upanishads are records of intensive question and answer sessions between old sages and students. And we have the writings like the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita. Now, there is truth to these writings, but many times the writers didn't really understand what they were seeing. They were seeing incredible things. I think the Mahabharata describes an ancient atomic war, which is a truly amazing thing, and I think it's very true. One of the important things to remember about our spiritual consciousness is that the spirit can neither be sick nor confused or faulty in any way. The human spirit is also not fed by the learning of the material consciousness, which is something I don't completely have my mind wrapped around yet, because we do have to live in material lives in order for our spirit form to evolve. But evidently it's not a direct kind of learning. The spirit itself is almost like a minute part piece of creation, and it cannot be affected by anything in the material realm. The psyche was called the soul. It has been called the soul. The soul is supposed to exist after the death of the body. What really, really remains after the death of the body is the spirit form. And we actually have a spirit form and a spirit body, which I, again, would like to learn more about the spirit body. But within the spirit body, we have something called the gemut. And the gemut controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The gemut also supplies the psyche with something called the harmonious swinging waves, which are said to originate from the realm of cosmic electromagnetic life energy. And there's this very, very interesting passage I always quote in the Goblet of Truth. It says, "Rivers, stones, lakes, bushes, trees, animals, plants, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involves many, many lifetimes. And the death is just the passage into the realm of pure spirit. And that many of these creatures are connected by psychic swinging waves. And they're aware of each other. And you know, if you go into the forest and you watch the birds fly away as a group, you can see them moving. They're connected by these swinging electromagnetic waves. And you see, every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in creation. And only man, with his free will, can run out and work outside of the creational natural laws. And that's why we're destroying our planet. But these swinging waves that come from the gemut and supply our psyche with tremendous power at times, and that's the way we get things like telekinetic abilities. Of course, we're not quite there on the earth yet, generally speaking. There's a term used in the book, The Psyche, called Gemuts Menschen, and I can't find it in a lot of my German dictionary stuff, but it's generally understood, according to Meyer information, as someone that radiates equanimity and doesn't get worked up easily. Equanimity is a state of psychological stability and composure, which causes these people who are Gemütsmenschen to be undisturbed by pain or other phenomena. They keep their balance of mind. And the virtue of equanimity is talked about by many of the major religions on the earth. So equanimity is something that we should strive for. But we have this thing called the gemut in our spiritual body, which sends the swinging harmonious waves into the material consciousness. And the gemut regulates the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. You see, our spiritual consciousness can never become psychically disturbed, but our material consciousness can. The gemut cannot even be influenced by negative powers. The gemut cannot be influenced by negative thoughts. And actually, the psychic swinging waves that come from the gemut can generate healing effects in the body, and this is described in Contact 390. These swinging waves bring powers which are triggered by a very strong unconscious self-suggestion through which a self-healing can be brought about. And some of the homeopathic remedies are really just the function of the swinging waves coming from the gemut into the psyche, where then they have healing effects. The fluidal swinging waves are even still present in the dead body for a while. And this is mentioned in Contact 582. Only our highly sensitive pineal glands exhibit the capability of perceiving the fine fluidal swinging waves, which sometimes express themselves in inner pictures And there is an article up on the Freedom of Mankind site, or the Future of Mankind site, the Billy Meyer Wiki, that talks about fortune-telling, star reading, clairvoyance, and self-fulfillment. And it talks about these harmonious swinging waves. They're also talked about, as I said, in the Goblet of Truth. One of the things that's brought out in the book, The Psyche, is something about the secret sciences. Here on the Earth, there's been a whole area of science that's been covered up. And these are called secret sciences, which could completely change our world. And the Meyer information says, if we understood the secret sciences, we could put an end to war, to religion, to politics. And there is this spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasada, where sometimes Billy gets some of this information. Past life memories. Let me talk a little bit about past life memories. And some of this information came from Marianne Ullinger Mondria, who works directly with Billy Meyer pretty much every day. And she sent me an email on past life memory. And she explains that the essence of all knowledge and experience and wisdom from our predecessor personalities is loaded into the new memory of the subconscious, which means the highest value of every single consciousness form is transferred from the storage banks in the spirit realm into the overall consciousness block, or out of the overall consciousness block into the new memory of the subconscious. That means the wisdom of our predecessor personalities goes into our subconscious. The overall consciousness block is something in the spirit world, and it's where the new personality is created for the new incarnation. So what I'm saying here is that the wisdom of the predecessor personalities is loaded into the subconsciousness of the embryo. Let me continue here. The former enormous knowledge of our predecessor personalities is therefore hidden as essence in the memory of our subconscious and in detail as data impulses in all the external storage banks. You see, we have external storage banks. We have storage banks in the universe. We have storage banks associated with the wisdom of the people on our planet. And we actually get impulses from these storage banks. These impulses are like signals. And Billy was very, very open to these signals as a small child, and actually was almost kind of overwhelmed by these signals as a very young boy. And I often talk about the article that Billy's written called How It All Began. When one night in May, he started to really hone in on these signals from the universal consciousness, from these storage banks. And he understood the purpose of his life, and his past life information became more aware to him. But generally, we can't recall our past lives generally. Not at this point of our evolution. It would be too confusing. But Marion goes on to write here, from there are memories of past lives. They can be activated through our conscious searching and inquiring, because only by intercepting inspirations of the subconscious and by consciously and continuously working with them. Marion Ullinger has more articles up on the Future Mankind site. If you search for Billy Meyer Wiki, you can find some of these articles. The consciousness block, then, that I was shortly mentioned, is dissolved into pure creational energy. And from this creational energy, the overall consciousness block reprograms the consciousness block of the new mind. We get a new material consciousness with every incarnation, even though the wisdom of our spirit form is still there. The wisdom of our predecessor personalities goes into our subconsciousness. The word subconsciousness is an anglicized version of a French word coined by a psychologist called Pierre Janet, who argued that underneath the layers of critical thought functions of the conscious mind lay a powerful awareness. And he called this powerful awareness the subconscious mind, because there is a limit to the information that can be held in conscious focal awareness. I believe that's so true. I learned so much, and I can only hold so much in my conscious focal awareness. A storehouse of one's knowledge and prior experiences is needed. This is the subconscious. And let me read, I think this is from The Psyche, page 88. The actual decisions and deeds of every human being are only partially based on fully conscious considerations. The greatest part stems from the area that is withdrawn from the immediate influence of the will, and that's the subconscious. So the incredible power of our thoughts is just really beyond the ability for most of us to really understand. Our consciousness is much like a tree. You could compare the evolution of our consciousness just to a tree. The trunk exists above the ground, the crown of the tree exists, but the spiritual side are the roots which lay deep into the ground. If an imbalance emerges between the inner and outer, the tree will collapse in stormy weather because the roots are just laid out too flat. An imbalance is a lack of proportion between corresponding things. Everything in the Meyer information seems to talk about maintaining a balance. So maintaining balance is probably one of the creational natural laws, because the universe itself, the superintelligence behind everything, is really balanced between the positive and the negative. It's only slightly positive. It's not like our religions have taught us. It's really neither good nor evil. So we need to learn the balance of thoughts. We need to look at nature and see the balance that comes from nature. The book, The Might of Thoughts, in the dedication, Elizabeth Moosbrugger, who is the wife of the man that wrote And Still They Fly, Guido Moosbrugger, she says the book, The Might of Thoughts, is dedicated to humankind that's ill in its consciousness, so it can find the creational natural way which it lost so long ago. Now, in 1991, Elizabeth Moosbrugger saw a fantastic spectacle when she was with Billy, and this is mentioned in Contact 239. Billy and her, probably some other people there at the Semyase Silver Star Center as well, saw three discs that were some 300 meters in diameter. These were UFOs from the Tao universe, three large spaceships from the Tao universe. And the ships were on an exploration and research flight in our universe. And they were inspecting the Semyase Silver Star Center. You see, our universe has a parallel universe called the Tao universe. And evidently, both of these universes were created at the same time. And there is now technology which allows very advanced extraterrestrial groups. One group that now lives in this other parallel universe, they're called the Timars. And Billy's second contact was with a woman from the Tao universe. These contacts lasted for 11 years. She taught Billy many things, particularly about the Giza intelligences. And I talked about that at the beginning of the show, but I never mentioned that Billy actually got to travel far below the Giza Plateau down these old darkened corridors with Ascot, and where he got to see, when they finally got down to their headquarters, their ancient spacecraft underground, don't ask me how it got there, and he saw religious artifacts. And he was very touched and confused by this. He was really astounded. He didn't know what to think about what he was looking at. And Ascot then had to tell him the whole story of Atlantis and Lemuria and how these rulers existed on the earth after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. And he talked about their names and the kinds of things they had done. And after that, Billy kind of traveled the Middle East and studied the religions of the world. And one of the things that he learned among his travels in the study is the importance of thinking independently. And it says in the Might of Thoughts that an evolution of the consciousness can only come about through the independent thinking of each human being. But Billy says that thinking is becoming stunted on our planet because we live in a consumer society in which everything is pre-chewed by television, radio, newspapers, magazines, and books. So people don't think for themselves anymore. They try to align their lives with the great masses. But there are only few who really have their own thoughts anymore about what they hear, about what they read, about what they feel, and about what they perceive. And this is a great tragedy, because, and this goes back again to our religions, who did not emphasize and don't emphasize independent thinking. As a matter of fact, if you look back to the Crusades, people that went on a different path in their, even their religious lives than, say, the Catholic Church, they were martyred. They were burned at the stake in the auto da fe. They were drawn and quartered, split apart by horses. They were put on cannons and then blown into pieces. They were, all sorts of horrible things were done to people who had independent thinking, which is really a virtue. Think about that. People being killed because they had independent thinking. It really makes you wonder. Another thing that has been undermined over the years by the followers of religion is logic and deductive reasoning. If A, then B. You know, being able to come to a conclusion just by reasoning. You know, all men are mortal. There's a premise, and then we can say that's pretty much the truth. And if John Smith is a man, then you can say he's mortal. He's going to pass away someday. You know, this is the kind of thinking independently, the kind of logic that has been pushed out of our society. And Ascot explained it this way. Remember, Ascot is from the Tao universe. She was Billy's second contact. Billy had meetings with her for 11 years, and she said the human, meaning the earth human, is still not capable of coping with and fully understanding the truth. And he is not yet mature enough to know his future and approach it correctly. For that reason, the truth must be rewritten prophetically for him as an equation in order to make him think independently, where he slowly finds and recognizes the truth for himself. So, we have to find the truth for ourselves and clarify our thoughts. One of the most important things that any human being can do is to clarify your thoughts. Even if you think you know something, repeat it to yourself aloud and try to recall the details of it. By doing that, you'll find that confusion goes away. Your thoughts will become more productive. and more harmonious. And this takes effort and it takes repetition. But if you will repeat and practice repeating and clarify your thoughts, and if you can put effort and practice into this and some patience, it will lead to a more harmonious life. Clarification of your thoughts is a critical skill to acquire, because as you clarify what you think you know, it will become clearer and you will know, start to know more. So sometimes learning begins at what we think we already know. And what happens is we take away ambiguity. And one of the reasons we have anxiety on the earth is because, really, things are not clear to us as they should be. And we're swimming in a sea of ambiguity and confusion. And in confusion, there's uncertainty. And the boundary between things are lost. The distinction between things are lost. What clarifying your thoughts does is it brings things back into clarity. And you'll find that when your thoughts become clear, that success is almost a natural byproduct of clarified, clear thinking. So, neutral, positive, clear thoughts lead to good feelings, which lead to good habits and better circumstances in your life. Just like planting a garden, you have to pull up the weeds. You have to cultivate the good garden, the healthy plants. Don't let the wildly growing weeds come up to choke all of those good thoughts that are in your consciousness. Now, there's something about negative repeating thoughts, which is still an amazing thing to me. I don't know why this happens, but negative repeating thoughts, they have a life of their own and they keep coming back. And you have to be able to stop these. Because every time you have a negative thought that repeats, it narrows your frame of reference and you start thinking more and more in terms of negative things. And the themes associated with negative thoughts appear over and over again. And that's where you have to learn visualization. You have to learn to stop verbal thought. You have to start to picture things in your mind, pleasant things, relaxing things. You need to breathe deep. And that's where you can start to meditate and focus on one thing and clear your mind of all verbal thought, because we drive ourselves crazy. That's where insanity comes from, by those negative repeating thoughts. And if we can stop those negative repeating thoughts, then things will become clearer to us. We'll get clarification. But if you don't stop those thoughts, the human being is shaken and knocked about by the circumstances of his or her life. And you shouldn't think of yourself as a helpless created creation of external conditions and influences. We, both he and she, us, we are the Lord and Master of our lives. And we need to practice self-cognition and take up self-examination and let self-control grow and start to know oneself and start to clarify our thoughts, because that which you think, you will make real. Good and positive thoughts must be nurtured, clarified, focused on. You must have a good opinion of yourself. You need to feed and protect those good thoughts. You need to cherish those good thoughts. When people become criminals, when they become depraved, virtuous, vengeful, and so forth, they've had these thoughts already in their minds for a great time. So we need to put a stop to those kinds of thoughts. And remember that there's a tremendous might to our thoughts. Here's what it says in the book called The Psyche, page 118 in my particular version of The Psyche. Says, "The tremendous might of thoughts has not been discovered, only in our day, even though its right application, still new to the human being of today and to him, appears like a book with seven seals." I don't know why Billy says that. And that's a phrase that appears in our Bible, so I don't know why he chose that phrase, but that's what he chose. It goes on. "This is so because of the mass of human beings were hardly conscious of the might, because this was kept secret from them for thousands of years by those who were accurately informed and in the know. Under the punishment of death, they were often forbidden to reveal their knowledge, their cognitions, and their ability. As strictly forbidden knowledge, an enormous amount of nonsense, as well as everything real, actual, truth-based, and in accordance with the laws and recommendations, was assimilated into these secret sciences, to which no normal outsider ever had access. A fact that is still today in the 20th century. Its realness cannot be denied. Even today, much of the unmeasurable knowledge of humankind, which has been collected over tremendous periods of time, is hidden in the inaccessible secret sciences, and will be defended until the death of the Pope, the bigwigs, and those of the secret services, which bring them tremendous life-affirming benefit, progress, and success. Then, religions and politics will be eradicated in the shortest possible time. The financial industry will disappear. War, unpeace, hunger, and all the terrible things of the world would suddenly come to an end. Once we learn the tremendous power of our thoughts and how to control and steer those thoughts. But we're not there yet. But at least we have these books, Macht der Gedanken, The Might of the Thoughts and the Psyche, to focus on and to learn on. And this is the way we take control of the circumstances of our life. And this is the way we bring our planet back from the destruction that it is seeing. And there's a man named Alan Savory who is going to talk about how to stop the desertification of the earth. Did you know that much of the earth is turning into a desert? This is a very, very serious problem. Let's listen to this clip.
The most massive tsunami, perfect storm, is bearing down upon us. This perfect storm is mounting a grim reality, increasingly grim reality, and we are facing that reality with the full belief that we can solve our problems with technology, and that's very understandable. Now, this perfect storm that we are facing is the result of our rising population, rising towards 10 billion people, land that is turning to desert, and of course, climate change. Now, there's no question about it at all. We will only solve the problem of replacing fossil fuels with technology. But fossil fuels, carbon, coal, and gas, are by no means the only thing that is causing climate change. Desertification is a fancy word for land that is turning to desert. And this happens only when we create too much bare ground. There's no other cause. And I intend to focus on most of the world's land that is turning to desert. But I have for you a very simple message that offers more hope than you can imagine. We have environments where humidity is guaranteed throughout the year. On those, it is almost impossible to create vast areas of bare ground, no matter what you do. Nature covers it up so quickly. And we have environments where we have months of humidity followed by months of dryness, and that is where desertification is occurring. Fortunately, with space technology now, we can look at it from space. And when we do, you can see the proportions fairly well. Generally, what you see in green is not desertifying, and what you see in brown is. And these are by far the greatest areas of the Earth. About two-thirds, I would guess, of the world is desertifying. I took this picture in the Tihama Desert while 25 millimeters, that's an inch of rain, was falling. Think of it in terms of drums of water, each containing 200 liters. Over 1,000 drums of water fell on every hectare of that land that day. The next day, the land looked like this. Where had that water gone? Some of it ran off as flooding, but most of the water that soaked into the soil simply evaporated out again, exactly as it does in your garden if you leave the soil uncovered. Now, because the fate of water and carbon are tied to soil organic matter, when we damage soils, you give off carbon. Carbon goes back to the atmosphere. Now, you are told over and over, repeatedly, that desertification is only occurring in arid and semi-arid areas of the world, and that tall grasslands like this one, in high rainfall, are of no consequence. But if you do not look at grasslands, but look down into them, you find that most of the soil in that grassland that you've just seen is bare and covered with a crust of algae, leading to increased runoff and evaporation. That is the cancer of desertification that we do not recognize till its terminal form. Now, we know that desertification is caused by livestock, mostly cattle, sheep, and goats, overgrazing the plants, okay, leaving the soil bare and giving off methane. Almost everybody knows this, from Nobel laureates to golf caddies, or was taught it, as I was. Now, the environments like you see here, dusty environments in Africa, where I grew up, and I loved wildlife, and so I grew up hating livestock because of the damage they were doing. And then my university education as an ecologist reinforced my beliefs. Well, I have news for you. We were once just as certain that the world was flat. We were wrong then, and we are wrong again. And I want to invite you now to come along on my journey of re-education and discovery. When I was a young man...
Well, we'll have to cover this a little more in detail next show. Alan Savory, a researcher who has learned to reverse desertification and bring back deserts into, turn them into beautiful green areas again. So anyway, hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. I've certainly enjoyed bringing it to you. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we will see you next time. Have a good evening, and take care, and we'll talk to you next show.